This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Flint, as you know, has been in the news a lot these days. Lead contamination of the water, people getting sick, some dying from Legionnaires' disease. One of the most violent cities in the country. But Flint is home to nearly 100,000 people. Home. And a new book tells the story of some of those who've made Flint their home. Its title is Happy Anyway, a Flint anthology. Joining us now is the editor of that collection of stories, Scott Atkinson. Scott, before we start talking about this collection, let's hear from one of the authors. This is Jan Worth Nelson. She's reading an excerpt from her story, Beam, Arch, Pillar, Porch, a Love Story.
By the time I got to Flint, I was 31, never married, childless. My 20s had been flamboyant, memorable, exhilarating. But then I was 31, and I skidded. I remember saying to myself something like, "You're an emotional isolate, kid. When are you going to have somebody to love, etc.?" I was ready to grow up somewhere. I just never thought it would be Flint for the next 35 years. I thought I would put in a few years, pay off some grad school debts, and then move on. I don't know where I thought I would go. Sometimes I think, how could this have happened? One night recently I heard Rachel Maddow say on TV, parsing our latest misery, "Is Flint, Michigan still habitable?" And for a moment, I felt like everything was falling apart. My nerves faltered, and I wondered how any of us, have managed to be here all this time. But before this confessional gets too grim, I want to say my story has a lot of happiness in it. You might not even have to wait till the end. I will fast forward a little of it now. I'm not one to celebrate Horatio Algerish life plans. I'm more of a so-it-goes girl who's had some decent luck along with a real life of missteps, bungled love, and, in certain surprise circumstances, requited yearning. Here's the thing. Sometimes when I get up in the morning and look out the window into my backyard, where finches scallop onto the bird feeder and a cardinal flashes red in the paper birch, I feel peace and something I can only describe as joy. So there, you doubters. It can happen, even in Flint.
Scott, that story, of course, challenges the national narrative of Flint. How does that fit into this collection's title of Happy Anyway?
Yeah, so the title came from a story I'd written for Belt Magazine early on about a guy named Pastor Bobby. This was once the water crisis had gotten to a point where we knew just how bad it was with lead in the water. And initially, I hadn't planned on writing about the water crisis at all. There was just so much media there, and I didn't want to feel like I was getting a paycheck from a crisis. But Belt reached out to me and asked me to do something, and I wanted to find someone who could tell the story I think needed to be told, which was, you know, Flint was struggling before, it is struggling during this crisis, and if we can fix the water problem, it will continue to struggle with all the problems it's had. And I found this guy, Pastor Bobby Jackson. He runs a shelter on Flint's north side. He's been dealing with Flint's problems all throughout, will continue to. And I described him as being happy anyway, because he's just the happiest guy in the world. Any small good thing that comes to him is just one more blessing. Blessings abound with Pastor Bobby. And I described him as being the only kind of happy you can be in Flint for a lot of people, which is sort of an earned happiness. Jan was someone I reached out to immediately when I knew I was going to do this collection, because that is something she has written a lot about. She edits a local magazine that she's written for a long time in Flint. And it really fits with what I want to do, because Jan is more a person who knows intimately a lot of the struggles with Flint, but also is absolutely in love with the city.
Let's take another listen to another author, another excerpt.
Hi, my name is Layla Millier, and this is an excerpt from Do You Realize? I was half a block away when he pulled out a gun and pointed it straight at me, cocked his head. Here we go, I thought. I had really done it this time. I had nowhere to duck to. I approached an infamous patch of broken glass on the sidewalk, considered picking up the pieces for defense, but something made me walk right over it and miss my opportunity. I kept walking straight towards him. I was carrying a milk-white calculus book. I imagined it stained with my blood. Would my mother have to pay for the cost of this book if I died? Or would they take pity on her and hold the bill? 10 feet now. I spread my arms wide. We lock eyes. 6 feet. I discover his gun is real. 5 feet. I have no goodbyes to say. 3 feet. Here I go. Dying in the middle of the day. 2 feet. Silence in my head. I meet the barrel. It was pointing at the meeting of my collarbones the entire time. Are you scared? He says. I mug him as best I can in my numb state. No. My voice is strangely firm. He steps out of my way, puts away his gun. Are you a student? He motions towards my books. Yes. My voice is no longer firm. What are you studying? English. He gives me a smile, and then runs to catch the bus. I watch him as he bouncily climbs the steps and then turns around to shout from the doorway, Wait! How old are you? 20, I yell back to him and watch as his bus leaves. I was 16 at the time.
That's quite a passage. It says a lot about growing up in Flint. How much is violence or crime a recurring theme in the collection?
You know, it kind of comes and goes. And I was really glad that it was a part of the story because one thing a lot of people have said to me just looking at the title is, oh, well, great, you're showing the positive side of Flint. And what I really wanted to do was show Flint for the complicated and nuanced place that it is. So I did not want to sugarcoat Flint's problems, but I wanted to show that Flint is more than just a, quote unquote, revitalized downtown and more than a place of crime and violence.
But what do you think? Why do you think these stories are important to tell?
There's a lot of attention on Flint right now, and I think there's a lot that the rest of the country can learn from Flint. We're considered a canary in the coal mine for a lot of issues, and a lot of people get frustrated that Flint is often boiled down to just a couple lines in a news story, which is inevitable in some ways. I mean, I've written those paragraphs as a journalist. But the attention's here, and people are curious about Flint. And I think if we really want to know about a place like this, and we're going to talk about it and want to learn about it, we need to know about it from the people who live there.
Yeah, it's more than plastic water bottles and lead pipes. It's, you know, it's again and again, it keeps getting listed along with Detroit as one of the most violent cities. I think that living in a situation like that is pretty important to show, though. We've done some stories about how kids are scarred for life because of the constant tension of living in a situation where you might be accosted at some time. And I want to go to this next reading. It's called Fresh to Death. It was written by Eric Woodyard.
I was laying in bed, chilling with my pregnant girlfriend when my mother barged in the room to deliver the news. Tay just died, she yelled. I jumped out of bed in disbelief. Tay and I had been hanging out that entire week in celebration of my 25th birthday. In fact, I was right at that same after-hour spot that he got shot in front of just 4 days before the incident. What if I had decided to attend the comedy show that night on Sunday? I would have likely trailed him to get a bottle of liquor. Would those guys have shot me too? Maybe I wouldn't be here either. That's a scary thought, but a truthful one.
These stories are in your face sometimes. I understand why you would want this balance, though. There's mm-hmm. also stories about life, love, loss. What was your guiding principle for what to include and what not to include?
I got to tell you, I felt like I really lucked out as far as what came in because my fear was that I might get some sort of long, sprawling essays musing about the loss of the auto industry and all the things that I think we've heard a million times. And everything that came in was or so much of what came in and what I ended up choosing all fit what I really wanted, which was a detailed cross-section of the city. So you have Jan talking about the finches in her backyard, and then you have Eric talking about what it was like to have his best friend murdered. And one of my favorite parts of that story was, which is hard to edit, was he talks about he's a reporter for the Flint Journal where I used to work, and he talks about being in the newsroom the next day. And he overhears reporters talking about the murder that just happened and where it fits in the statistics and how you cover that as a journalist. And he's sitting there unable to talk about that because it's his best friend. And so I think just the juxtaposition of what it's like to live that and what it's like to see that through the eyes of, you know, how it ends up in the newspaper, just really kind of highlights the importance of getting these stories from the mouths of people who live it every day.
This last story is from Teddy Robertson, and we chose just a bit from the story. It's called No Pawn Shops for Old Stories.
12 to 14 feet of wedding ring sets arrayed in rows, the rank and file of failure. Engagement rings with sad small stones. The purchaser could afford little, but wanted to be proper. The recipient was thrilled at the new stage of life that this tiny diamond signified. But now, through disappointment or desperation, it's in pawn, along with the wedding band.
Tell me a little bit more about that story.
I love that story, and Teddy is just a delightful person. That is a story about a robbery that happened in the Mott Park neighborhood where Teddy lives. And what was stolen were some trinkets, some jewelry, nothing that would have made a ton of money at a pawn shop. And she gets into what each of those things meant to her, not just in terms of, you know, value in terms of dollars, but the memory where they came from. And one was an old stick pin that her grandfather, I think, had, and he worked in the early days at GM, and just the rich history that comes with these objects.
The stories behind the objects.
Yeah, yeah. And it just gets into, you know, the history of Flint, what it means to carry these things forward and to have those taken away from you, which I think, you know, if you want to look at that a little more metaphorically, Flint is a place that is constantly having these things taken away from us. And I just love that story. I mean, there are more scenes like that where she continues to walk these pawn shops, you know, all but hopelessly, but just wondering if, you know, that past will resurface for her.
So what are you hoping readers take away from this collection?
So, you know, I keep saying that from a marketing perspective, I'm kind of an idiot, because a collection like this is usually written just for a local audience, which I do hope that Flint people pick it up and read it and kind of pump their fists because these stories are being told. But I really edited this with an outside audience in mind. I really wanted to show the rest of the world, like, if you want to know about Flint and if you want to talk about Flint, you know, like, you know what you're talking about, which a lot of people assume they do. Here's a book for you. Here's how you can read it. Here's the closest thing you can have to a conversation with people who live here from all across the city every day.
Scott Atkinson is the editor of a collection of stories called Happy Anyway, a Flint anthology. I want to thank you, and I want to thank the authors for taking the time to record their readings for us.
Thank you.